The power company, which owns the stricken nuclear power plant on the Japanese coast, says it's about to start compensating residents of the immediate area. It's not yet clear how much of a financial burden this will be, but there are about 50,000 households within a 30-kilometre radius of the Fukushima Daiichi nuclear power plant, which was disabled by last month's earthquake and tsunami. The ABC's Hayden Cooper has been to see some of the devastated coastal areas. He spoke to me from our Tokyo bureau.
We went out of Tokyo, Brendan, up to Sendai, which, as you know, is one of the areas hit pretty badly in the tsunami. Look, the reason we went is not only to see how the recovery is going, but also the airport reopened at least partially for the first time since the tsunami. And you'd remember the pictures of the tsunami sweeping through that airport. Well, since then, US Marines have been in and cleaned it up. They've opened a makeshift terminal to operate a few flights a day, and we managed to get on the first flight in, so it was quite an experience.
What were your impressions, given that you've been covering this story for some time, mainly from the Tokyo bureau?
Yeah, look, it was just compelling. To be honest, no amount of television pictures in the world can prepare you for what actually is on the ground up in Sendai and elsewhere. It was just stunningly sad to see that the damage which has been done. In some places, it's as though the only recovery work that's happened since then is to clear the roads. All the rubbish and wreckage has just been pushed aside, but it's still there. You know, you'll drive around and there'll be cars piled up. There'll still be boats lying around on the ground. At one point, we drove past and there was like a bus sort of wedged on top of a building with trees wedged in between it. It was just an absolute mess. So really, it's just awful to see. Again, and a lot of people have been saying this, I'm just struck every time by the dignity and I guess the respect and also the stoicism of the Japanese people, not only in the way they're responding, but in the way they react to you when you arrive in these places.
I guess Japan hasn't had such an extraordinary event like this really since the end of the war, when the whole country had to pitch in and rebuild.
Yep, they rebuilt then. They rebuilt before then, after the Kanto earthquake in 1923, and they're rebuilding again now. And as I said, you arrive to talk to these people. Generally, we get a pretty good response. We show up and say, you know, we're from the ABC, Australia Hoso Kyokai Des in Japanese, and they invariably are happy to see us and talk to us, even if they've been through just incredible suffering of their own. And a few people we spoke to in Sendai were happy to show us around their properties, which were absolutely devastated. One man in particular, Keisuke Sasaki, runs a business there, lost his house, yet was so kind to show us around and walk through the wreckage with us, and was even encouraging us at the end of the day, saying, you know, don't worry, we've all got this feeling of Ganbaro Nippon, you know, don't give up, hang in there, Japan. And I sort of took the liberty and said, look, all of Australia returns that feeling to you as well. So it's quite moving to see the attitude and approach of some of the Japanese people, and it's mirrored all over the recovery zone.
What evidence do you see of assistance from other countries in that part of Japan?
It's still there, but I didn't see a lot of it. I know that, as I said, the Americans helped rebuild the airport. We did see Japanese soldiers who are still searching for bodies. At the place we were, they were saying they've already searched with machinery and now they need to get down and do it by hand, basically, because there's still some people missing. And that was the other example where most people we approach, they were happy to talk, even in the case of the military. And after we did an interview with one soldier there, we were walking away thinking it would be pretty rare just to walk up to a serving soldier in Australia and being able to get an interview with them. We would have to go through 9 levels of bureaucracy first before they were given approval. Now, don't get me wrong, Japan has its bureaucracies, but again an example of how willing they are to cooperate and give the world some sort of idea on how they're going and just how big the task is at hand.
That raises an interesting point about access for the media. New Zealand, for example, after the quake there, there were tight restrictions on access to that central area where the quake had happened. What sort of restrictions do you face, if any, when working in that sort of region?
There were very few restrictions. We landed at the airport. As I said, it was the first flight in. There was a lot of local Japanese press interest. So a lot of the people getting off the plane were being interviewed as they arrived. And many of them had come back for the first time to the areas perhaps that they grew up in to see the damage and so on. So we joined in interviewing people. We then hopped in a taxi and he took us around to some areas which were hit by the tsunami, and there were no issues at all with access. The area was just totally obliterated, yet the roads that had been cleared, we were quite easily able to go in and film and talk to people around there. So that's what I mean. It was just different to the way that things would happen in Australia. I dare say by now in some other countries that people would be getting quite sick of the media. Of course, you've got to be careful about how you approach these things, but generally the access was very good.
Hayden, you obviously speak some Japanese. How did that come about?
Look, I studied it at school and university for a while, and as did a lot of Australians, you included, I think, Brendan, and then let it drop for a while and then picked it up again 5 or 6 years ago. So it's been pretty useful. It helps a lot to speak even a little bit of Japanese. I'm no good on talking nuclear physics, unfortunately, and that would have been a lot more helpful in the past month or so, but people appreciate it when you do make the effort to speak to them in their language. But then at the same time, what English they know as well, they try to use. So it's about meeting each other in the middle in most cases.
You mentioned the nuclear issue, and that's a huge spectre to be hanging over people's heads. What's it like as a correspondent, thinking you're on an island in Japan where just over 200 kilometres away there's this terrible catastrophe that's still happening?
Yeah, look, I haven't been too worried about it. I feel reasonably safe here in Tokyo, although obviously people are worried about it. Sendai is about 90 kilometres from Fukushima. So look, if we had decided to stay in Sendai for an extended period of time, then it would obviously be important to take more precautions, like getting dosimeters and that sort of thing. The Australian government's saying stay at least 80 kilometres away, and my feeling is that generally they would be more cautious than not. So, I felt okay in Sendai and definitely feel all right here in Tokyo. But then there's always the questions about how reliable is the information that's coming out of the Japanese authorities. So that is on the back of everyone's minds, but, we're taking as many precautions as we can.
The ABC's Hayden Cooper.